This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome, listeners from around the world, to episode number 702. This is your host, Jason Hartman. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode today. We will be talking a little politics with our guest here in a moment, talking about Clinton's war on women and Jeb and the Bush crime family. So we here on the show are an equal opportunity disparager. We go both sides of the aisle. How do you like that? We want to be equal opportunity, right? So we're gonna criticize both. So I think you'll be interested. Our guest is Robert Morrow. Again, we're not usually doing so much on the political side, but hey, we got an election coming up, so this is topical stuff, and it certainly affects us as real estate investors. There's no question about it. It absolutely blows my flipping mind when I hear someone make an idiotic statement like, well, I don't care about politics, or I'm not into politics. Listen, personally, I'm kind of bored with politics myself. I'm not that into it, but you have to be. I mean, do you care about your financial future? Of course you do. That's why you're listening to the show. So you got, this stuff matters. I mean, these elites that run the country and run the world have a huge impact on all of our investments. It makes a big difference. And today I interviewed someone for an upcoming episode about a nationwide eviction service. And one of the very interesting things I discovered with a little pricing calculator on their website, it shows you, it is a real insight into which markets are more politically landlord-friendly, and which markets are politically, politics, this stuff matters, folks, landlord-unfriendly. And of course, we want to invest in places, all things considered, if everything else is equal and everything else is apples to apples, which of course it never is. We've always got to make trade-offs like everything in life, but we want to invest in landlord-friendly markets whenever we can. That's part of the political scene, and it's why this stuff matters so much. Well, one of our investment counselors, Sarah, sent me an interesting email. She took a screenshot of it and sent it to me. And it's from Talmer Bank. Her comment was, I guess we're not the only ones with an inventory shortage. I smell new construction in the near future. That's what Sarah's comment is. And I'll just read you a little bit of this email because, again, it is telling about the current state of the market. It says, in housing news, mortgage applications were up 14% on falling rates last week. While many were refinances, purchase applications were 23% higher year over year. Wow. Did you hear that, folks? Purchase applications for mortgages were 23% more than a fifth of 100% higher than last year at this time. That is a big deal. That's a lot more buyers in the marketplace. And it says, now get this, the next point is even more telling. Purchase applications could have been higher, according to experts, but lack of inventory plagues many markets and has helped drive home prices back up. Next point, inventory concerns are not only for the purchase market. Rental demand across all age groups and income types is creating a supply imbalance. What an amazing time to be a real estate investor, especially if you own a lot of real estate right now, because you're in great shape. Now, if you're trying to get into the market and increase the size of your portfolio, or if you're just starting out, yeah, it's going to be frustrating. But what's the, you know, that's because everybody's out there buying right now. So that's just the market we're in, folks. Inventory is tight, and we got to just learn to deal with that. But we do have some decent selection, and we could solve our own inventory complaints here if we would simply lower our standards. Isn't there a song about this? If you can't be with the one you love, then love the one you're with. if you can't love the house you buy, how would that go? I don't know. Anyway, it'd be a little different, but you know, it could apply to your real estate investments too. But hey, it could be worse. You could be investing in Wall Street, the modern version of organized crime, but you're not that dumb because you're listening to the show. Now, speaking of dumb, wow, financial literacy. Wow, we have got a serious problem in America, but in a way, thank God it exists, because these people will be your tenants for decades to come. You ready for this, folks? I saw a little article about how FINRA, and FINRA is the organization that allegedly provides some control over the financial advisors and regulates them and whatever the heck they do. Anyway, I'm no fan of FINRA or any of the financial services industry, quite obviously, but they did put out a little quiz and it was striking. It was epically scary how bad Americans fare on this quiz. Now, okay, so the article was entitled, "Can you pass a basic test on finances?" Probably not. The vast majority of Americans answered barely half of the questions correctly. And folks, do not sweat. You're going to take the quiz with me in just a moment. This is not a small study, okay? This is according to a survey of 27,564 Americans. It was called the National Financial Capability Study, put out by the FINRA Foundation, okay? Roughly two-thirds of Americans aren't able to correctly answer 4 out of 5 of the basic questions about finances. And you will be happy to know that your illustrious host answered, he took the test twice, once on his cell phone while he was waiting in a waiting room for an appointment on Sunday, or maybe it was Saturday, I don't know, Sunday, I think, and I got 100%. I got all 6 questions right. There's only 6 questions. It's real easy. We're going to take it together, okay? And then I did it again today in preparation for this interview here on Tuesday. And again, I got all 6 questions right. So who is Rush Limbaugh to have that saying, one hand with half his brain tied behind his back, or whatever his old saying was, right? Heck, I could do this thing with my whole brain tied behind my back. Here are the questions. You ready for this? This is going to absolutely astound you. The questions are about as hard as the real estate exam, which is really scary how easy it is too. Okay, so here are the questions. There are only 6 of them. You ready? And then we'll get to our guest, okay? Suppose you have $100 in a savings account earning 2% interest per year. After 5 years, how much would you have? The choices are more than $102, exactly $102, less than $102, or I'm stupid and I don't know. Just says don't know. Okay, so there's your question. What do you think? More than 102, exactly 102, less than 102, or you don't know? Well, all of our listeners are very smart, so of course they know you're going to have more than 102. Duh, really obvious, right? Okay, question number 2. Imagine what the interest rate on your savings account, So imagine that the interest rate on your savings account is 1% per year. Isn't that despicable? And inflation is 2% per year. After 1 year, would the money in the account buy more than it does today, exactly the same, or less than today? So the question is more, same, less, or you don't know because you're just financially illiterate. Well, the obvious answer is if you earn 1% and inflation, the hidden tax that is basically like a negative interest rate, is 2%, well, you're going to have less money because you're losing 1% per year. And they didn't even mention you're only losing that to inflation. Now, you're going to get taxed on that 1% also because the IRS doesn't know how to recognize inflation. And sometimes this really benefits us, but it hurts most people because the IRS is just rather illiterate when it comes to inflation. Okay, so obviously it would be less is the correct answer. Question number three, if interest rates rise. Now this one, frankly, I could understand why a lot of people got wrong, okay? But here's the question. If interest rates rise, what will typically happen to bond prices? Rise, fall, stay the same, or there is no relationship? Well, a bond, just to explain this, a bond is basically a loan. When you are a bond holder, you are essentially a lender, right? You understand. This is just my editorial. This is not what it says there. And so you're a lender. So if interest rates rise and you own this bond or this loan that you're getting paid back at a lower rate, and you wanted to sell off that loan or that bond, it's the same thing, basically. It's just a bond is just a fractionalized loan, really, is all it is, where you're being the lender. Well, would your loan or bond be worth more or less? Would it rise or fall? Well, obviously, it would fall. It would fall. Now look at that question. I could see people getting wrong. Heck, I didn't get it wrong. You probably wouldn't get it wrong either. But for the typical clueless American, you know, that makes sense to me. Okay, next question. True or false? No, this one's another easy one. A 15-year mortgage typically requires higher monthly payments than a 30-year mortgage, but the total interest over the life of the loan will be less. True, false, or you don't know? Well, obviously true is the answer. And what they didn't tell you is probably on the 15-year mortgage, the rate would be slightly lower too. But because you understand in advanced principle that none of the other real estate gurus are out there understanding or teaching unless they've copied me. And listen, I could refer you to another podcast where the host basically copies me on everything, okay? And if he's listening, he knows who he is. Hi there. Because you know about inflation-induced debt destruction, right? So you would actually prefer the 30-year mortgage, even though more interest will be paid. Listen, we don't pay our interest anyway. Our tenants do. And we would rather have that longer loan. It's a better deal, okay? More on that on past episodes. Listen to the last 701 episodes. I've explained it in great detail. All right, so the answer was true. Next question. True or false? Buying a single company's stock usually provides a safer return than a stock mutual fund. True, false, or I don't know. Well, that would obviously be false, right? Okay, because you're more diversified. Now, what they didn't tell you is that, of course, that mutual fund charges you a bunch of extra fees and all that kind of crap. But, you know, the concept of diversification makes sense generally. Okay, and then there was a bonus question. You ready for this one? Suppose you owe $1,000 on a loan, and the interest rate you are charged is, most of the people taking this test are probably paying interest rates like this because they're so dumb. Okay. Suppose you owe $1,000 on a loan and the interest rate you are charged is 20% per year, compounded annually. If you do not pay anything off at this interest rate, how many years would it take for the amount you owe to double? Okay, shut that thing off, will you? Bad sound effects here. Okay, so how long would it take for you to owe double? Well, 2 to 4 years. Well, the answers are less than 2 years, 2 to 4 years, 5 to 9 years, 10 years or more, or you don't know. It would take 2 to 4 years. Right at about 4 years, because remember, this is about the rule of 72, right? So I'm just going to share with you their explanation because I want you to understand this. Ignoring interest compounding, okay, so if it didn't compound at 20% per year, it would lead you to doubling in 5 years, right? Because 20% is 1/5 of 100%, obviously. Okay, so it'd be $200 per year. It's a $1,000 loan. There you go. You got your answer. But when it compounds, remember, Einstein said compound interest is the 8th wonder of the world. And he was right. But most people get this wrong because they don't get the idea of what? Inflation-induced debt destruction when they're on the side of the borrower. All right. So in 5 years, right? You got that. I'm throwing in a lot of my own words here. I think you can tell what's what. I'll leave it to you. Someone who knew about interest on interest might have selected the number less than 5. Someone who knows the rule of 72 heuristic would know that it would be about 3.6 years, which makes the correct answer 2 to 4 years. In finance, the rule of 72 is a method for estimating an investment's doubling time. Folks, we talk about that in the Refi Till You Die, right? Because we use the rule of 72s there to know when the portfolio value would double from 1 million to 2 million in the Refi Till You Die example. All right, the rule number, i.e. 72, is divided by the interest percentage per period, in this case, year, they're yearly periods, right? To obtain the approximate number of periods, usually years, required for doubling. The other responses reflect a misunderstanding of the concept of interest accrual. So I, thank you, got that one right also. I got all the questions right both times. Now, lest I brag, these questions were so flippin' easy, I couldn't believe it, right? But are they really that easy? Because guess what the national average is? Out of 6 questions, the national average is only 3.16. Get these right. And then you can actually do it state by state. And this is kind of funny. So in Alaska, people are pretty smart there, believe it or not. And I'm going to tell you a theory about this, by the way. 3.37 questions are correct out of the 6 in Alaska, whereas nationally it's only 3.16. Okay, now, what do you think it is in California? Ooh, not too good. It's actually lower than the national average. 2.79. They got less than half of the questions correct. What about Colorado? 3.13. Okay, Colorado's not too bad. Connecticut. 3.32, pretty smart in Connecticut. How about Washington, D.C., District of Columbia? 3. They got exactly half. Delaware, 3.35. Hey, that's the highest so far. Georgia, 3.02. Hawaii, 4. Wow. 3.45. Oh, let's grab another one here. Pick a state, Jason. Pick a state. How about, let's do, you know what I want to do? I want to do Massachusetts, because Boston has got so many colleges, and it's kind of thought of to be a smart place. 3.2, and I want to do one other. I want to do New York. Let's see if New York. So that was only slightly above the national average there. How about New York? It includes New York State, so, but 2.91, actually not so good in New York, I'm surprised. With all those financial people there, don't they know better? So that is really, really telling. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. And if you want to go and take this little quiz, go to usfinancialcapability.org and you can take the test there. Okay? Mind-boggling. Really, truly mind-boggling. So that, if anything, should guarantee that you have a lot of renters for many, many years to come. Hey, I wanted to thank our listener and client, Richard Mayron, for the nice testimony on iTunes. He gave us 5 stars and said, first off, I want to say thanks to Jason for putting together the best real estate podcast on the internet. As a real estate broker, I knew that his advice from the beginning was spot on, and he turned me from a real estate agent to a real estate investor. And over the last 6 years, through his great advice and encouragement, he's made me a lot of money in investment property. I've attended a number of Jason's seminars, and they are fantastic too. Thanks, Jason! Exclamation. And Richard, thank you so much. I remember, when did I first meet you? I think it was at our Meet the Masters event in Irvine, and I'm going to guess that that was about 2010. I think that was the 2010 Meet the Masters. So thank you for the nice review on iTunes. And the rest of you, please go write us a nice review on iTunes. We would very much appreciate it. Helps increase our search rankings, and we very much appreciate that. Hey, let's get to our guest. But before we do that, remember, go to jasonhartman.com and join us in September. We've got 2 events in September. Number one is our Venture Alliance weekend on Labor Day weekend in Seattle. That's going to be great fun. And then we've also got our real estate buying and software, real estate investing software event here in Phoenix coming up the 2nd weekend of September. So jasonhartman.com for more information on those. Let's go to our guests. It's my pleasure to welcome Robert Morrow to the show. He is an interesting guy. He is a historian. He's involved in the Texas Republican Party as a delegate, and he focuses a lot on the history of Bush, the JFK assassination, Clinton's, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm going to have him tell you a lot more because there's a lot to cover. Robert, welcome. How are you?
Doing great. It's an honor to be here, Jason.
Well, it's good to have you on the show. And where are you located today? Are you in Austin?
I'm in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, great city. I love Austin. Tell us a little bit about yourself and give us some background. There's a lot more to cover than I covered in that brief intro. So tell the audience more, and then let's talk about the Clintons first.
Well, you got the basics. I'm a historian from Austin, Texas. I'm also a self-employed investor. I was undergraduate history at Princeton University. I got my MBA from the University of Texas. I've worked in real estate before, property management. Politics have been an interest of mine for a very long time. I've become somewhat an expert on the Clintons, the Bushes, and the JFK assassination.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, I'd love to talk about Clintons first, since they're the most in the news of any of those. We may well have a Hillary in the next election, I think. So I think that'll be of particular interest. I mean, you've been studying the Clintons for a long time, right?
Yeah, since about 2005, I went to Amazon.com and bought every single book that's ever been written on them. I spent about 10 years doing opposition research on the Clintons. I can give you all their dirt in about 30 minutes.
Fantastic. Well, let's dive in because there's a lot of dirt. I mean, I remember back in, you know, in 1992, hearing about Whitewater and all the past women in Bill's life. And, you know, I can't even remember all their names. There are so many of them.
Well, it's not just the women. Bill Clinton has been a serial rapist since he was at Oxford University in 1969. Bill Clinton was kicked out of Oxford because he raped a 19-year-old co-ed named Eileen Wellstone. He has no degree from Oxford. The State Department covered up the rape. They did not want a scandal. They just kicked him out. Ten years later, when he is the Attorney General of Arkansas, Bill Clinton raped a campaign volunteer named Juanita Broderick. And NBC interviewed her in 1999. They vetted her very carefully and put her on national TV, and they intentionally delayed their interview until after the impeachment vote on Bill Clinton in the U.S. Senate. Otherwise, he could have been removed from office. Bill Clinton has also raped a Miss America. Her name is Liz Ward Grayson from Arkansas. She was Miss Arkansas and later became Miss America. She told her friends, especially Judy Stokes, that Bill Clinton had raped her, that it was not consensual, and that he had bitten her. Also, Juanita Broderick said that Bill Clinton had bitten her. So Bill Clinton is not just some sort of a, you know, pervert.
He's not just, what you're saying is he's not just a womanizer. He's a lot more than that.
He's not just a womanizer. He is a serial rapist, a serial sexual predator who has made multiple vicious, savage, unwanted sexual attacks on women over a period going over decades. As far as Hillary Clinton's role, she knew about the rape of Juanita Broderick in 1978. She knew about it in real time. You know, she went to the campaign office after Bill had raped Juanita, and she'd heard about it. She says, "You won't believe what the blankety blank did. He tried to rape some bitch." She was talking about Juanita. And then Hillary helped cover up Bill's rape of Juanita Broderick while he was attorney general. That year he was running for governor. Later in the fall, Bill Clinton was elected the governor of Arkansas in November of 1978.
I mean, a lot of people have made the accusation that the Clinton marriage is a sham, and that's on both sides of the aisle, not just Republicans or people on the right in general. Why do they stay together? Like, why would Hillary tolerate this kind of thing?
Bill and Hillary are codependent psychopaths with sick and demented cravings for power, and they've pretty much destroyed themselves physically by doing that. It is inappropriate to call their political partnership a marriage. It never has been one. Hillary Clinton did not want to buy a wedding dress for her wedding. She kept her maiden name, Hillary Rodham. At the wedding reception itself, Bill Clinton was making out with another woman in the bathroom and fondling her breasts. That is from the get-go. That is from October 11th, 1975. Then as he becomes attorney general, he's having multiple affairs with people like Jennifer Flowers and Susan McDougal and any woman with a warm body, whether it was a secretary or a contributor's wife or a contributor's daughter or a street hooker or Miss America, he was going to try and have sex with either consensually or he would rape them. As for Hillary's side, you're saying, well, what she's doing while Bill is on this pornathon, what is Hillary Clinton doing? Hillary Clinton is having affairs with both of her law partner friends, Vince Foster and Webb Hubble. Many folks do not know this, what I'm about to tell you,
Jason. The late Vince Foster, yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, the late Vince Foster, who, by the way, committed suicide over his failing relationship with Hillary Clinton. Chelsea Clinton is the biological daughter of Webb Hubble and not Bill Clinton. I'm sure of that with 100% certainty. You know, the Clintons, they had basically an extremely dysfunctional, open 1970s marriage with lots of in-your-face adultery by both parties. Hillary actually even told Bill Clinton that she was going to have sex with Webb Hubble in order to make partner at the Rose Law Firm where she worked at. And in fact, she did, and they had Chelsea in February of 1980. When I say they, I mean Webb Hubble and Hillary did.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is, of course, fascinating. I mean, what you're saying is many people, Robert, would consider it to be totally outlandish. You know, you could just be saying this stuff. I mean, you know, how do you know?
Well, I am saying this stuff. Of course, it's the truth. You know, after you have about 300 or 400 books on the Clintons and you spent 10 years studying them and you talk to people who personally know them and you know, you've read all the state troopers and you know how beyond the pale, dysfunctional. It's just kind of like imagine Bill and Hillary being on the set of the Jerry Springer show, throwing chairs at each other, except he's the governor of Arkansas on the way to becoming the president of the United States. That would be a precise summary of their relationship. Now, people at this point will say, well, what does all that matter? Okay. It matters because Hillary Clinton has used criminal tactics to cover up all this Jerry Springer dysfunction. She's been hiring very nasty private detectives since 1982. The first guy she hired, well, maybe not the first guy, but one of the early guys she hired was a Little Rock, Arkansas private investigator named Ivan Duda. And she told Ivan, she said, about Bill's women, she says, "Give me their names, addresses, and phone numbers, and we're going to shut these bitches up." That's Hillary Clinton in 1982. 16 years before the Monica Lewinsky affair of 1998.
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
Amazing.
Wow is correct. And then so throughout the years of the 80s and the 90s, Hillary Clinton is hiring these very nasty private detectives, Anthony Pelicano, who's now in jail now for terrorizing half of Hollywood. He worked for the Clintons. Jack Palladino, who should be in jail right now, was running terror campaigns for the Clintons. When I say terror campaigns, you know, they would break the windshields of Bill's women and put shotgun shells on the driver's seat and send them letters and phone calls saying, you know, Marilyn Monroe was snuffed. Jennifer Flowers had her home broken into multiple times, and until ultimately in 1991, it was completely and utterly ransacked because they were looking for links between Jennifer and Bill. Bill had a very long affair with Jennifer Flowers. He was afraid she might say something, and so they ransacked her entire home. So the Clintons used police state tactics to cover up their beyond dysfunctional Jerry Springer lifestyle. That's why it's relevant, because you don't want people who have a habit and a love of police state tactics, beating up people, intimidation, smashing car windows in, nail gunning people's tires, running terror campaigns. You don't want them to be the head of the United States military, the CIA, the DEA, the FBI, or any other government agency, because you know they will abuse it. You're positive of that. That is why it's relevant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm not saying it's not relevant. I'm just saying, how do people verify it, you know?
Yeah, well, they verify it because we know for a fact that Jack Palladino was paid $100,000 in 1992. Jack Palladino admitted in 2003 that he was running terror campaigns for Hillary. WorldNet Daily reported on that. He admitted it to Melanie Morgan, who's a conservative talk show host who's a cute-looking blonde. She met him at a book fair. He did not know who she was. She started chatting him up, saying, "Wow, what y'all did to Kathleen Willie, that was pretty awful. I mean, you nail-gunned her tires, you killed her cat." And he was just laughing about it and chuckling about it with his wife, who's his partner in his business. So, yes, we know who was running the terror campaigns on Kathleen Willie. Kathleen Willie is this poor woman who in 1993, her husband's having financial troubles. She goes to see Bill Clinton in the White House. Now, Bill Clinton assumes if you're going to see him, it's all about sex, because he's a sex freak, okay? So his face got real red. He started talking horny-like, and he attacks her in the Oval Office, November 29th, 1993. And then 5 years later, Kathleen Willie has been subpoenaed in the Paula Jones case. Paula Jones is the poor woman that Bill Clinton exposed himself to. He dropped his britches. His face was all red. He was talking horny, and he asked her to kiss his penis. So we have a rampaging serial rapist, pervert, sex predator, Bill Clinton, operating at the highest levels of American politics, being enabled to do this by his wife, who hires all these goon squads to clean up after him.
Wow, this is unbelievable, unbelievable stories. Yeah.
So let's talk about what happened to Kathleen Willie. So Kathleen Willie, in 1998, this right before the Monica thing blew wide open in January of 1998, she was being deposed in the Paula Jones lawsuit because of a sexual harassment. People had heard that Bill Clinton had sexually harassed her as well as Paula Jones, as well as Juanita Broderick, as well as numerous other women. So Kathleen Willie started having her car tires being nail gunned in the white walls. Not like you're driving over a roofing nail. Nail guns going into the white walls of her car. Suddenly her cat Bullseye, she's had for 15 years, it goes missing. And then one day she's walking her dogs a few days before the deposition in the Paula Jones case, and this stranger, this goon approaches her. She lives in a very rural area. It's not like there are a bunch of homes around. It's kind of like out in the country almost. She's walking on a deserted country road at 6 o'clock in the morning with her dogs. And this weird stranger comes out of nowhere and says, "So did you get your car fixed? Yeah, really sorry to hear about your cat Bullseye. He was a good cat, wasn't he?" And then he mentioned her children by name, Shannon and Patrick. Then he says, "You know what? You're just not getting the message." So Kathleen Willie is about 5'3", 115 pounds. She was wearing a neck brace that day because she'd had neck surgery. She's very vulnerable. And one of Hillary Clinton's and Jack Palladino's terror squad goons is terrifying her out of her wits, walking the dog at 6 o'clock in the morning, 2 days before her deposition. That's how the Clintons roll. That's who they really are. They're criminals. They're rapists. They're perverts. They're terrorists. They should have been thrown in jail a long, long time ago.
So the Vince Foster death, though, was a suicide.
Yes. Now, there's been some very important work done on that by a lady named Marinka Peshman, who wrote a book called Following Orders. And Marinka spent a lot of time with Linda Tripp, who had worked in the Clinton White House very close to Vince Foster. And she was there in 1993 when all these various cover-ups were going on regarding the scandals of the Clintons. And what Linda Tripp said to her, she gave Marinka, this author, a lot of clues that Vince Foster was indeed a suicide, but that he had killed himself in his office, not at Fort Marcy Park. So the real cover-up with Vince Foster was, obviously, he did not die at Fort Marcy Park. You know, there was no dust on his shoes because his dead body was found 200 yards down a dusty trail, and there was no dust on his shoes. So he'd been dumped there. There were carpet fibers all over his body. He'd been rolled up in a carpet to be transported there. A witness who found his dead body, there was no gun in his hand. And then when the park police came 30 minutes later, there was a gun in the hand. So the body was being placed there in the middle of a witness discovering it a little bit too soon. And so they planted the gun in Foster's hand. So many people for many years on the right wing are just convinced that Vince Foster got murdered. That's not true at all. Vince Foster was obsessed with Hillary Clinton. He was in love with her. He was a married man with three kids. He had followed her to Washington, D.C. He was one of the Clintons' closest political lawyers who would handle all their scandals. They would call him their Rock of Gibraltar. Vince Foster was in kindergarten with Bill Clinton in Hope, Arkansas. So they go way, way back. The Clintons are not killing Vince Foster. While Bill Clinton was living a life of pornathon, rape, and sexual assault, Hillary was screwing Vince, and she was screwing Webb Hubble. So she had Chelsea with Webb Hubble in 1980, and then Vince became her main man. And Vince Foster was deeply in love with Hillary, but Hillary has a very nasty demeanor. She often makes very cutting, rude, savage remarks. And in 1993, Vince Foster was failing on the job at the White House as an assistant White House counsel. He was very depressed over Waco after the Clintons killed all those people there and burned them up and shot them and ran tanks over them. Vince was mortified at Waco. Hillary was cold as blood. Hillary was making all sorts of demands on Vince to solve all these scandals, make them go away, lie for the Clintons. Vince Foster was crumbling down psychologically. I guess you could say Hillary Clinton psychologically killed the guy.
Wow. Yeah, well, that's an interesting way to put it. And I believe that if there are court cases over domestic abuse being emotional and child abuse being emotional, that's a valid statement you just made.
Well, when the FBI did investigations after Vince Foster died, they did not publicize at the time, but they found out very quickly that Vince and Hillary were having an affair, okay? That was the 800-pound gorilla in the room that everybody who knew the Clintons knew that was a fact. And they also found out that in the week before he committed suicide, Hillary had humiliated him publicly in the White House in front of a lot of professionals, saying, "Vince, you know, you're just a hick from Arkansas. If you can't hack it, you ought to get back down there. You know, you're screwing up. You know, you don't have it in you. You're pitiful. You know, buck up, buddy." She was humiliating him, and his wife had moved to D.C., and she was, of course, nagging him, and Hillary is, you know, terrorizing him and not giving him any sex on top of that. He was having all these scandals to deal with, and I think that in an act of aggression towards Hillary Clinton, Vince Foster committed suicide in the White House, in his White House counsel's office. Hillary finds out about it through other co-workers there, and Hillary immediately institutes a cover-up saying dump his body off premises as soon as immediately. And then she organized a coordinated lying and perjury campaign. So that's how the Clintons roll, you know, lying and deceiving. They're like having a tornado go through somebody's life. Just ask the Foster family.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
As a side point, there is another woman in the 1970s who was having an affair with Bill Clinton. She was one of his students when he was a professor at the University of Arkansas, right when he was running for attorney general. Her name was Suzanne Coleman. She was a married woman, And Bill Clinton got her pregnant. And she was 7 months pregnant. And then in 1977, like, you know, right after Bill Clinton has become attorney general, she commits suicide. And I think she committed suicide because Bill Clinton says, I'm not going to leave Hillary. I'm not going to take care of you. I'm not going to take care of the baby. You probably ought to go have an abortion. See, Suzanne Coleman's husband left her once she became pregnant. So I think that we have two cases of people who committed suicide directly as a result of dealing with Bill and Hillary Clinton. Suzanne Coleman in 1977, probably, over Bill, and Vince Foster in July of 1993 over Hillary. I think that pretty much summarizes the Clintons. The only guy that ever truly loved Hillary Clinton was Vince Foster, and he blew his brains out.
Uh-huh. Wow. That's something else. That's just amazing. So, you know, I mean, all of this manipulation and all of these just bullying tactics, I mean, everything bad here. If everything that you say is correct and if it's true, I mean, how do these people get so far in life? You know, is this what it takes to get ahead in politics? Maybe.
Well, if you're a psychopath and you have no morals, you're willing to lie, steal, cheat, and kill, that gives you an edge because there are no rules. Now, granted, along the way, they have made many, many enemies. There are many people who hate the Clintons personally, who despise them, who are ready to utterly destroy her campaign, and they will. If Hillary Clinton ever runs, she and Bill will be – their image will be permanently destroyed. She's not going to win. In fact, I do not even think Hillary Clinton is going to run for president. Would you like to know why, Jason?
I would, but first I want to ask you, I definitely would, but first I want to ask you, so you're saying that a lot of these skeletons will come out? I mean, wouldn't they have already come out in the last election?
No, of course not. There are a lot of things that Barack Obama could not say about the Clintons in 2007, 2008, if he wanted to keep a unified Democratic Party for the general election. He couldn't go into these serial rapes, sexual assaults, predators, private detectives, beating up people. He couldn't talk about the Clintons and the Bushes and the drug trade they were involved in during Iran-Contra in the 1980s. He couldn't talk about the murder of Barry Seal. He couldn't talk about Bill Clinton using his state troopers to literally beat up a guy named Gary Johnson. Not the libertarian, but Gary Johnson, who was the lawyer for Larry Nichols and the next-door neighbor of Jennifer Flowers. The Clintons have never been tested in a national general election since November of 1996. Do you understand that? Winning Senate, Democratic Senate in New York two times does not count. Losing to Barack Obama in a Democratic primary is not the same thing as going up against a Republican in a general election where they're going to throw the kitchen sink at you, the master bathroom sink, the outhouse at you,
yeah,
and even the table at you. They will throw everything at Hillary.
Right, right. But Obama didn't have to do it himself. I mean, there are proxies. There are other people that aren't even part of the Obama campaign that could have said this stuff.
They didn't do it. They did not do it. Now, I was doing it in the grassroots level. A lot of my stuff was getting out there in the people's eyes and ears in 2007, 2008. But even the proxies of Obama would not go there on the Clintons. And I'll give you an example of something that will be the most popular thing on YouTube in 2016 if Hillary runs. It'll be Bill Clinton's rape of Juanita Broderick. The broadcast of that on NBC News. If you Google it, Bill Clinton's alleged rape, Lisa Myers, NBC, you'll find it. That video was not shown in the 1996 campaign. That video was not even shown before Bill Clinton's impeachment vote. It is so powerful that NBC delayed the airing of that interview of Juanita Broderick, where she talks about how viciously Bill Clinton raped her. They postponed it until after the Senate voted on Bill Clinton's impeachment, and half the Senate voted to kick him out. If they had seen that video before they voted, Bill Clinton could very well have been convicted and removed from office.
Unbelievable. Wow, this is just amazing stuff. Okay,
it is amazing, yes.
So why won't Hillary run?
Hillary is not going to run, I'm 95% sure, because she very likely has brain cancer and a brain tumor in the back of her head at a very critical spot. That's why she's wearing these Coke bottle glasses so she can see. Brain tumors sometimes press on an optic nerve. That's why she passed out a year and a half ago and got a concussion. Because a brain tumor can make you pass out for no reason at all. You can black out and then fall down and hit your head. It's very dangerous. I don't know this for a fact, but two tabloids are saying that, the National Enquirer and the Globe, and also Roger Stone has said that his contacts have told him that Hillary Clinton has major medical problems and will not be running for president. And then if you add on top of that Bill Clinton's serial rape history that Barack Obama could not talk about and that we have learned so much more about since November of 1996, Hillary Clinton would be insane to place herself into a general election. Absolutely insane.
Wow.
She would get her butt mopped all over the floor like a dirty mop.
Wow. So this is really the end of the Clinton dynasty then until, and I hate that word dynasty. I hate the whole concept of it, but we've had a bit of a Bush dynasty too.
And I'm sick of both of them.
I mean,
yes.
Yeah, but this is the end of it until Chelsea comes up and does something, right?
It is the end of it. And you're probably saying, well, why does Hillary not just pull out right now if things were that serious? Number one, the Clintons are attention whores, and they have to be in the limelight. It has to be in the center of things. They're gonna drag that out until the very last possible moment. So, I would look for Hillary Clinton to withdraw from the presidential race in early 2015, which is about a year from now, maybe January, February, or March of 2015. Hillary will say, "You know what, guys, I'm not running." That's what I predict will happen. In the meantime, she gets to run around and act like she's running and get paid $200,000 a speech. The Democratic Party gets to use her marquee name to build up a donor base and email addresses and organize off of it. So they're using her to organize this year with the hopes of taking that organization and giving it to somebody else like Joe Biden or somebody.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, you act like you're running, you get paid a fortune to do speaking and stuff like that, and you develop all this excitement, then you just pull out at the last minute and keep the money.
Well, I'm 95% sure she'll do that. So your listeners are really getting some inside scoop when you're listening to me right now. I don't mean to brag right now, but you've learned about Bill Clinton's serial rape history. It wasn't just Juanita Broderick. You've learned that even though he was a sex maniac, some of his affairs were not consensual, that he would degrade women and pull his britches down and sexually attack women. You've learned about Hillary and her nasty private detectives running terror campaigns on Bill's women, Anthony Pelicano, Jack Palladino. You learned about the break-in on Jennifer Flowers' home in 1991. You've learned about Bill Clinton using his inner circle state troopers to beat up people. That's a story in and of itself. And you've learned that Hillary Clinton probably is medically unable to run for president in 2016. That is my personal opinion. She is medically not fit to run, and therefore we're going to see a charade of her pretending to run for about one more year, my friend Jason.
Wow, that's fascinating. That's a fascinating analysis. It really is. And so I don't know if this is your area, but, you know, who do you think will run? I mean, you mentioned Biden. Do you think it'd be Eric Holder, Biden? I mean, I don't know who.
I think it's the Democrats are going to nominate Joseph Biden because he is the current Democratic vice president, and he gets along with both Obama and Hillary to a certain degree. And I think Biden will probably go up against either Rand Paul or Ted Cruz or somebody from the Tea Party in the general election.
Wow. Yeah, fascinating. Well, and who do you think will win that? I would sure hope it would be Rand.
I think it's going to be Rand Paul. Or Ted Cruz, number two. Yep. I think the Democrats are going to lose the 2000 in a very close race, will lose the 2016 general election. And it won't even be close if Hillary Clinton is a nominee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I hope you're right. I would love to see Rand Paul president. I think that'd be pretty phenomenal. It really would be. Robert, give out your website and just, you know, briefly tell us about some of your other work before you go, too.
Sure. Well, to reach me, you can Google my essay, The Clintons' Greatest Shame, Chelsea is the Biological Daughter of Webb Hubble. you'll get to me, or you can email me at Morrow, M-O-R-R-O-W, 321, at AOL.com. I have expertise in the Bush family as well. I have a very low opinion of them, but that's another show for another day. And also, I'll tell you that Lyndon Johnson and the CIA murdered John Kennedy. And that's another show for another day, too, okay?
Fascinating stuff. We'd love to have you back to talk about that stuff. Robert Morrow, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, it was a pleasure, Jason. Have a great day.
I've never really thought of Jason as subversive, but I just found out that's what Wall Street considers him to be.
Really? Now, how is that possible at all?
Simple. Wall Street believes that real estate investors are dangerous to their schemes because the dirty truth about income property is that it actually works in real life.
I know. I mean, how many people do you know, not including insiders, who created wealth with stocks, bonds, and mutual funds? Those options are for people who only want to pretend they're getting ahead.
Stocks and other non-direct traded assets are a losing game for most people. The typical scenario is you make a little, you lose a little, and spin your wheels for decades.
That's because the corporate crooks running the stock and bond investing game will always see to it that they win. This means, unless you're one of them, you will not win.
And unluckily for Wall Street, Jason has a unique ability to make the everyday person understand investing the way it should be. He shows them a world where anything less than a 26% annual return is disappointing.
Yep, and that's why Jason offers a one-book set on creating wealth that comes with 20 digital download audios. He shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I like how he teaches you how to protect the equity in your home before it disappears and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
And this set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered for only $197.
To get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia Book 1, complete with over 20 hours of audio, go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back and collect checks every month just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.